Hello, and welcome to the Back Issue Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer.
In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about an older comic book storyline.
In this Back Issue Spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to be discussing Shadecraft number 1 through 5. James, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, John?
I am doing well. Now, this is by Image, and it is by Joe Henderson, who did Skyward, correct?
Yeah, I think it's the same creative team.
Cool. I think it is too, actually, now that you mentioned it. That was what the text page at the back of the first issue was kind of, hey, we got the band back together kind of thing.
Exactly, and it was kind of cool because we love Skyward so much.
Mm-hmm.
What year was that, 2020? Or I don't remember when it came out.
I don't
2019.
Remember. Probably 2019.
Yeah, 2019. We loved that. And then this came out, and I was like, I got to read it. And I didn't think you were going to pick it up because it sounded like it was taking a dark or magical or maybe horror take.
I did not originally pick this up for those reasons. It looked like just another kind of Image supernatural, you know, story or whatever.
Exactly. But I think you would like it after I read it. So what'd you think?
I'll be honest, it was not what I was expecting, and I mean that in the best of ways. It was much better than I thought it might be.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, I was surprised how fast of a read it was. And I mean that in a good way.
Yeah. It was a fast read. I remember reading it the second time, I was like, wow, I read these chapters really quick. But like you said, it's quick, but there's so much content in there. I didn't feel like ripped off in any way. It's just a quick read and a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to summarize it and such. Each issue really moves the story along and stuff. I'll be honest, I got through the first one and I'm like, okay, Zadie's brother was in a car accident, left him in a coma. That checks out. And he somehow turned into a shadow creature. I'm like, okay, that's a little wonky, but that's the premise. Takes the entire issue to get to the premise. Okay, at this point, I don't want to say it's feeling like standard fare, but kind of, sort of. At this point, I'm thinking not bad, kind of interesting. Don't know if it's my kind of story, but it was well done.
Yeah.
Because at that point, it really, the first issue, I don't want to say is a gimme for a lot of these creators, but it's easy to impress us because all the ideas are new, everything's bright and shiny, whether it's, you know, in this case, it's not literally bright and shiny, but you get the idea.
Exactly. It's like cool factor, cool newness, but does that last?
Exactly. Can they follow it up with a second issue that maintains the momentum they've built on that first issue?
Yep.
And I got through the second issue really enjoying it. I thought it did a great job establishing Zadie's relationship with her brother, who, again, seemed to be taking being a shadow fairly well, better than I probably would have. And I'm like, well, maybe it took to the second issue to get to the premise point. And I'm kind of, you know, second guessing, but not in a bad way, some of the assumptions I'd been making about the story at this point.
Yeah.
And by that third issue, I'm like, man, this story is moving forward each and every issue with a solid story chunk that plays into a bigger tapestry without ending on a, you know, overblown cliffhanger or something like that.
Exactly. And there's lots of twists and turns in the story,
mm-hmm.
that when you're first starting off reading it, you're like, wow, I didn't expect that. Wow, I didn't expect that. And just to see it come full circle, it was just, this creative team, they write in such a refreshing way that it's different than any books I read. And they're always done just such a great quality. I love the protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the angle they took with this. It's something so different from Skyward, yet it feels a little bit familiar. Because you have that strong female lead and everything like that, and the family aspect on it. You know, he always ties into the families really well. So it feels familiar, but very different.
I would say this was better written than Skyward.
You know what? I can see that. I can see you saying that. Yeah, I think so.
You don't have to see me saying it. I just said it. So
that's true. That's true. I can see people seeing that, like, when they read it. Because I think he's gotten better at the writing aspect, but also it wasn't as direct. It was a little more a surprise to the story as it kind of unfolded.
Yeah, it kind of, it was weird. I was going to say it kind of sort of zigged and zagged, but what I mean by that is the storyline is very much straight through. It's not like they're jumping back in time or you know, revealing information that we should have known earlier. None of that crap.
Nope.
It's a very, you know, things are happening as they happen kind of a deal. But when I see it zigzags, there are a lot of times where it's like, oh, I thought it was going this way, but they're heading a little this way, and not a, they did it wrong because they made me think they were going this way and they went somewhere else. But in a, wait a sec, I was kind of thinking this character was going this way and it's going this other way. And oh, it's got this connection to that. And it's a reveal of information where it's like peeling back the layers of an onion versus just, you know, cramming the onion down your throat or something like that. Because there's some writers where they try to do this sort of storytelling, but I feel they didn't set it up right, or it's contrived, or it's just not working, or something like that. But this was a really clear, solid narrative thread with a steady reveal of information, but I kept guessing and second-guessing where it was going, what was going on, who could be trusted, all of that kind of stuff. It kept me very engaged.
Me too. And that's what I loved about it when I was reading it. I remember, and I kept on mentioning, this is something I liked. And when we were doing the back issue spotlights, I'm like, we can need to review this.
Mm-hmm. I dragged my feet on it. I'll admit that.
Yeah. And it's because it's not really a horror book. I mean, you could say shadows are scary, but that's not really what this is about. It's a darker tone, but at the same time, it's so dark, yet it's a light story. It's a story of light. And it's a story of hope and goodness and family values and things like that. So I liked it a lot.
It's visually dark. It's not thematically dark.
Yes, that's it. Exactly.
And I don't know if it was just the name Shadecraft made me think it was going to be kind of shadow witchcraft and supernatural and all this. There's some unexplained stuff, like how the whole shadow powers work and how they came about and whatnot. But I would say this is a surprisingly superhero-ish story.
Yes, I agree. Almost like in the vein of, what is that one by Kirkman? Not Irredeemable. I'm trying to remember his big superhero story.
Invincible.
Almost like that type of theme where there's a family member who had mm-hmm. powers, and it's kind of passed on from generation to generation. And here we're seeing that same type of theme and that same thread. So yeah, it's a superhero story, but the power is the power over shadows. And they used it in very nice ways, even with that Lightroom scenario. Mm-hmm. I really liked that.
Yeah. I kind of saw that little twist coming because I've seen that kind of you know, plot device used before, but it was well done here, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
One of the key differences between like this and something like Invincible is Invincible had an ever-growing cast and it was doing a lot of world building.
Yeah.
This, I felt, kept the story more personal, more close-knit. Because really, I mean, the cast is fairly small.
It's very small. It centers around the family and the guidance counselor in disguise and a few, you know, people at school. That's it.
Well, yeah, really, once you get past Zadie, her brother, their two parents, the guidance counselor, there's like Josh and Carla.
Yep.
Josh is a would-be boyfriend for Zadie, and Carla's kind of the other part of a love triangle, kind of, sort of, but not quite, Thorn and Zadie's side or whatever. That's about it in terms of name. I mean, there are other people we see in the story, of course.
Yeah, but that's a really tight cast when you get down to it.
Yeah.
And what is so cool about this story, because I was like rereading it, is at the very end when he was talking about, oh, we're leaving, you know, for a little bit because this thing's coming to Netflix or I can't remember, going into the, you know, a TV series. But they were talking about how they wanted it to be a satisfying story that you could read. But we're going to come back to it. And that's how I felt reading this. I felt satisfied with the five issues. If they never revisited it, I would not feel ripped off. I wouldn't feel gypped. But of course, there's so much that they can expound on it. But I did read it in the single issues when it came out. And I remember reading that last issue and saying, oh man, it's going away because they're looking at bringing this to the screen, which I'm happy with. But like I said, you didn't feel like, oh, I didn't get a story and I'm left off hanging here.
No, not at all. I thought it got to a point where the opening kind of arc had gotten to a sense of resolution, and it was something that could serve as a springboard for another story, should they choose to tell that. And honestly, I was hoping they would, but not one where I feel if they don't, I'm left hanging.
Yes, and that's hard to do because let's take it in another scenario, pretty much any other creative team. not to pick on Saga, but let's talk about Saga. You know, they left for 2 years. It wasn't left at a point in the story where I felt there was any kind of resolution to anything. There's all kinds of plot threads. Or even, I'm trying to remember, Greg Rucka, he did that Magic series, Black Magic.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
When he left that off, I felt like it was such a gap because he hadn't wrapped anything up. This, I feel like, was a nice package. You can read it, never revisit the property and feel satisfied, but you want more, and he says, I'm giving you more, which I was happy.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very tough to do, and I thought he did it very well.
Well, I mean, it was one of those things that, okay, it's a 5-issue arc. You could say, oh, it's just written for the trade. You know, it's not, though. Every issue stands solidly in and of itself in terms of moving the story along, giving a satisfying story chunk. Yet, over the course of the 5, it feels like, albeit somewhat of a short TV season kind of a thing.
Yeah.
You know, I think they could take almost each one of these issues and flesh it out a little bit further, enhance it a little bit, and turn it into, you know, a half-hour, 45-minute, hour-long kind of TV episode or something.
Oh, I definitely could. Like, one issue where we're at the military base, that could be a whole, or one episode, where it's the action that takes place around the military base. You know, mm-hmm. that's a whole episode there. Plus, the whole discovering the powers, that's a whole episode there. Discovering the mom and her origin, that's a whole, you know, thing there. So there's several things in here where you could see about 8 or 10 episodes coming out of these 5 issues, which it tells you about the depth of the material that you're getting here in these five issues that read really quickly.
Yeah, I don't know how long it actually took me to read these, but I remember looking at the clock afterwards thinking it felt like it didn't take that long at all. And because there are times where, you know, I'm done reading the stuff for one of these back issue spotlights, and I'm just like, okay, that was a lot of reading. I'm tired. It's a little later in the evening than I'd like it to be or whatever. And at this point, it's like, I mean, the story pulled me through all the way.
Yeah. I knew when I read this, I'm like, John's going to love it, but I didn't want to say anything to spoil it for you.
No, this was a really good call on yours. I appreciate you recommending that we do this because it was one of those things that this covered a lot of kind of storytelling things in terms of, again, revealing information that makes me rethink things without, you know, cheating or frustrating me or anything of the sort. It avoided so many writing tics or whatever that just annoy the hell out of me.
Yeah, you don't get any of that. You don't even really get much on the way of flashbacks and stuff. I mean, there's a little bit with the mom that you see some stuff in the past, but it's needed for the story. But it's not used as like a crutch or the thing that you normally see in writing today. So I thought it was just very clever. And I also like, this is just me, it's very few and far between that we see, we see them from time to time, but Asian characters as the main lead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get it in Kirkman's, you know, Kung Fu title. I guess you call it a Kung Fu title. We get it here and there, like Silk, when she came out. I really liked her. And I really like this one. And the reason why, I know this sounds weird, but okay, my wife's Asian, and I try to get her to get into stuff that I like, but it's not always what she likes.
Mm-hmm.
When we went to visit Washington State, she said it felt like home because there's a lot more people who look like me. You know, mm-hmm. And here in Florida, there's not very many. I'm like, okay, she would read a story like this about this Asian character probably a little quicker before she'd read something about Peter Parker or something like that. I think she'd just be like, she can maybe relate to the character a little bit more. So I think it was kind of cool. And that might just be me and my bias because I'm so, you know, I love her, you know. And so like seeing this character, it made me love the character a little bit more. So I thought it was really cool.
Well, what I liked is the family we're following is Asian, but it's not about them being Asian.
Not at all. Not at all. They're just it's almost like a by the way. Mm-hmm. You know, here you go. Here's a character. And I thought she was a really cool character. I thought, you know, her insecurities were done well. The teen angst, even though it's not like teen angst where it's annoying, but the struggles that teens go through.
Well,
just seeing that.
It's not cliche teen angst.
No, it's legit and real. Like, I could see myself in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's more endearing. You know, you feel more endeared. And I like this character, and I've kind of latched onto her. I'm like, man, I love this Zadie. I want to see more of her.
I think if they were to turn this into a TV series, and I do think they should, and it sounds like they may be, casting the lead character of Zadie, you've got to get the right actress.
You definitely do. And I'm really excited to see who they pick. Because, yeah, TV shows, a lot comes down to casting.
Mm-hmm.
Who it is that they choose. But I love that about her. And like you said, it's not about her being Asian. That's not in here. But I think my wife would relate to her a little bit more, and I think she'd like it.
Well, I mean, to me, and maybe this is a naive approach or whatever, but diversity is something where, you know, we need different nationalities, ethnicities, and lifestyles and whatnot represented. But if it's one where the whole story with that is about that, it kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah, because then you almost take that and you make it like, if you make that the central point, that I am this character, this is who I am, then maybe John can't read it and relate to it. Maybe James can't read it and relate to it. I feel like anybody can relate to this.
Well, I mean, when the Ms. Marvel character came out and it was all about she's Muslim and all this stuff, I thought it was very interesting and very, you know, somewhat educational of, okay, this is what that kind of life could possibly be like or whatever. And I think there's value in that. But there comes a point where that kind of storytelling is, I'm trying to think of what the right term would be, but it is beating the drum of I have a message of this is what that life is like.
Yeah.
And there's a time and a need for that, absolutely. But I think for us to have true kind of equality and stuff, this kind of a story with Shadecraft, let's face it, 20, 30 years ago, it would have been a white girl.
It would have been, yeah, for sure.
And there's no reason it need to be. There's no reason, you know, that it wouldn't play any differently if they had recast the ethnicity of this character today to white, black, Asian, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I could see her being Indian, and it wouldn't change the story one lick.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not done as like a political thing. It's not done as a...
It's not beating any particular drum.
It really isn't. It's just like, it's a character that I feel like anybody can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody will enjoy. And that's what made it so fun, is because here's diversity in comics, but it's done in a way that doesn't feel like it's preaching to you. It's not on a soapbox. It's just done as, here's a good story. Here's the character that I want to write about. Awesome.
It's a universality of the character.
Yeah.
Young girl could have been this Zadie, versus in other stories, you could only be this character if you were of this ethnicity, because it's so about that.
Yeah, and this is a very diverse comic, because like, even the love interests in here are diverse, everything mm-hmm. in it, which I just thought was really well done, even the guidance counselor and things. And at the same time, I'm reading it, and I don't feel like it's becoming like Kal-El, Son of Superman, what we see coming with there, where I feel like it's the beating of the drum.
Yeah.
And so it's just so different. So this is the comic when I think when we look at it, we say, hey, diversity in comics, this is perfectly done. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, not just that, but also storytelling in comics.
Oh, storytelling. This is like short, concise, to the point, while not feeling short, feeling like fulfilled when you read that short story.
Mm-hmm. Again,
it's tough to do.
I felt every issue was satisfying. I felt the whole thing read very well back to back. Because I've read some comics where it's like, okay, this is a chapter of a larger story, and in totality it works fine, but any individual chapter, if I'd read them a month apart, I'd be lost. Now, granted, I read them all back to back, so maybe if I had read this as it was coming out, I might feel differently. I don't think so, because I think it does a good job of, again, beginning, middle, and end of every issue.
Yeah. To that point, I read this in singles spread out. My memory is not the greatest. We've all established that in many recordings here. But I remember it was not difficult for me to read. And I remembered what I had read before, so that means it was done well. And there was no recap at the beginning of the chapters when I was reading them.
Well, no recap at the beginning, and no character telling us what they already knew.
Yep.
So I was pleased with this. Again, easy read, and very much a page turner in terms of keeping me engaged, keeping me wanting to move forward with it. And it's so few comics are currently that way for me right now.
Yeah. This is one of the ones that was like that sweet spot. The thing that I felt with the Skyward, and there's a few comics here and there that I feel that way, where I read them and I feel like it's a thing that stands above the pile, while it's kind of so under the radar because you don't hear many people call this out. I don't think many people read it, which is a little bit ashamed. You know, if I was going to say an under the radar book would have been Skyward, then it would be Shadecraft. That people look at it and they're like, even that title, like you said, Shadecraft, oh, it's a witchcraft book. Oh, it's a horror book. And it's really not. It's none of those things. It's a story that I think so many more people would enjoy if they would just give it a try. So that's my highest recommendation. Pick this trade up and read it.
Yeah.
And you'll be surprised, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I was turned off by my suppositions about what it was going to be about.
Yeah.
I don't recall exactly how they had pitched this and promoted it initially. And I don't know if what they had said led me to believe that, or if I just looked at it and said, well, it must be this because, you know, let's face it, how many Image books are, you know, that kind of almost quasi-horror sort of a book?
There's a lot, because it seems like Image kind of got down to almost like a couple different genres for the bulk of their books. You know, it's like, oh, it's sci-fi, it's like this horror aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And there was so much of it. This was like the refreshing title from Image. Wow, this is nice and very different than anything they're publishing.
Yeah, but you look at it and you could easily dismiss it like I did of, well, it's Buffy with shadow monsters.
Yeah, exactly. And yet very different, yeah?
I mean, Buffy the series was great, and I think this stands on its own, and if converted to TV well, could give Buffy a run for its money.
I would agree with you there. And it could almost be like this generation's Buffy the Vampire Slayer, while it's nothing like the Buffy. I was reading the solicit. I pulled it up on Previews World while we were talking. You're like, why did this not go on my radar? Because I'm like, what could have driven John away? Because I remember I saw from the creative team of Skyward, you know, and I was like, I gotta buy this. So it says, Zadie Lou is afraid of her own shadow. She's a teenager, so she really should be grown out of it by now, right? But something weird is happening in her small town. Zadie could swear the shadows are coming to life, watching her, trying to kill her. But how do you fight something you can't even touch? And how does all this tie into her family of all things? Does not sound like something you want to read, yeah?
Yeah.
And it's like register pitch, the dark tones of Demon Slayer and something is killing the children. I think it has nothing to do with either one of those. I felt like this solicit, they actually wrote it poorly, I think.
Yeah, I think there's a better way to pitch the book than that.
Yeah.
Because I think it could appeal to people who want more of the Buffy supernatural sort of a thing, because there's a few aspects of that.
Yeah.
But I think it also could be done of a quasi-real-world take on superheroics. I mean, she's not going out to be a hero or whatever, but she's got superpowers of a sort.
Yeah, there's almost Miles Morales and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, with the Ultimate Spider-Man. I feel that superhero thing in here. I see, like you said, the Buffy thing in here with terrific art that's definitely not clean lines or photorealistic, but I love the art that Garbutt does.
You know, when you get the collection of the original Milestone stuff that has Static, We should think about doing the first few issues of Static as a back issue spotlight.
Oh, I'm completely down with that because I'm getting that big compendium thing.
Right, because that had a very similar feel of a young high schooler who gets powers and, you know, goes and adventures with them and stuff.
Yeah, and what's kind of cool is almost these coming-of-age stories, you know, it always tends to happen with these, you know, late teens and stuff like that. I don't know what it is, but I always enjoy reading them. I feel like they're not too, the characters aren't jaded by life, or they're refreshing. Their views, I can see their emotions because they're a little bit overly emotional, but not too much. And, you know, when you get to the adults, we've seen it all. You know, we react a different way. And so I think this is where you bring that freshness in life, is when you get to this age bracket. And so I like reading superhero stories about these young adults, boom, discovering their stuff, how they react, and how it impacts their lives. It's almost always a great read.
Well, and one of the things that this creative team really managed to pull off is a sense of anything could happen.
Yeah.
And not in the invincible Walking Dead Kirkman kind of a way of anything bad could happen and probably will. But here, there was a line or two of dialogue, and I don't want to give it away because I thought it was a really good one, where a character said something, and I'm like, you know, given how the story's going, okay, I'll buy that. And then a panelist said, nah, just kidding, kind of a thing. You know, and kind of, you know, but it was one of those that, sure, I've given up any hope of sanity in this universe or anything, but in a, given what you've already revealed,
yeah,
that kind of fits.
It does. I know exactly what you're talking about, too.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what, there's depth in the characters here, too, because you see Zadie, and she's a little more, I guess you could say, a daddy's girl.
Yeah.
But learning about her relationship with her mother, was very profound when you get to the powers and what drives them.
Well, particularly the reveal of that. That was one yes. panel that was just really well done.
Yeah.
And it's like, I didn't see that coming, but I felt I probably should have.
Exactly. You didn't feel like a dummy, and it wasn't something that was hidden. But yeah, you feel like, I should have seen that. Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you almost care about the mother more. Care about, you know, like, than maybe I did up until that point.
Well, I would say there were a lot of characters, and the mother certainly fits, the guidance counselor certainly fits, the potential boyfriend of, I thought they were going this way with the character, but, oh, wait, they're going this way. And not in a hairpin turn where I feel like I've just smacked up against a wall or something.
Yeah.
Because there have been other stories where it feels they're going one way and then, nah, they just didn't bother. And I'm like, you know what? You wrote it poorly because it was so much feeling that way. You were going right, but then you went left because you didn't know where you were going.
Yeah.
This didn't feel like that at all. It was leaning a little one way and then it kind of leaned the other, you know, kind of a deal.
Exactly. It's so tough to do. And after two books like this, with Skyward and then this, I feel like this is my creative team that is kind of like a go-to at this point. If I see a book by this duo, I'm going to pick it up, even if it's not a genre that I like.
I can understand that. I don't know if I'll go that far, but certainly I should have paid more attention to this initially and the more attention to this creative team, because they're doing a really great job.
Yeah, and did you read the text bits at the end? They had the first issue and the last issue. I didn't know if you read those things.
I did the first. I don't know if I did on the last.
Okay, yeah, the first was kind of, I like that because they were talking about how they were struggling to come out with this and they were nervous
mm-hmm.
because Skyward was so popular and following that up, you know, and being in the shadow of Skyward. Really good reading. I think everyone who reads it, buys this, should read that. The other one was not, you know, like there was good stuff in there. But that's where they said, hey, just wanted to let you know, we are stepping away from this because it's basically something that we're pursuing to have come out on TV for you guys, which I'm like, yes, please. And they said, we are coming back. So I was like, yes, I'm happy with that too. So both text pieces I felt were very revealing and profound. So I like them both.
Do you know where they may turn this into a TV?
Let me see. I'm going to pull up that fifth issue and see real quick. If they said the studio, because I can't remember off the top of my head. I read it the other day. Okay, first arc. We're working on Shadecraft during the pandemic. Okay, let's see this. Including adapting Shadecraft for Netflix.
That's cool, because that implies they'd have a decent budget to do the shadow effects.
Yep, so they're adapting it for Netflix. So that's where I kind of like threw my hands up in the air. I'm like, touchdown, let's do this.
That'd be cool. And again, they could do a short multi-episode run. Expand the things where they've got, in a live-action visual kind of a thing, you can spend a little more time on some stuff because you've got the shadows actually moving and doing stuff where it's like a panel in a comic.
Yeah. Now, they also said Lee, the artist, Lee Garbett, that he was going to be doing some Doctor Strange work, which he was.
Mm-hmm.
But they said they are getting back together after the Netflix stuff to do this again. So, I'm super excited for this because, like we've said over and over, this creative team gets it. They get how to write a good comic. They get how to draw a good comic. They engage you. They do not telegraph, and yet they keep you surprised. And
yeah.
they make their books so fun and so light to read. I mean, I could read this book three times over, and spread it out by a couple years, and it was just enjoyable this time as the first time
mm-hmm.
I read it. So I'll read it again, I'm sure. I'll probably pick up the hardcover when it comes out.
Yeah, it's the epitome of an easy read for me.
Yeah.
You know, once I got going and stuff, it was, it like I said, kept pulling me through. And there have been some other things I've read that, while I have enjoyed them, have either been so dense or, I'm trying to think how else to describe some of them, but somewhere it's like, okay, I've read an issue or two, I need to go take a break for a few minutes and then come back.
Oh, I know exactly what you mean by that. Because, especially with those older comics and not... Like, if you get to the 1980s comics, there's so much material on the page and so many word bubbles and thought bubbles. It takes a good amount of time to get through an issue or two.
Yeah, but what's funny is I feel these issues had a similar number of plot points or beats or however you would, you know, whatever metric of story you want to use as some of those, you know, earlier comics and such.
Yeah, and I felt like they kind of showed it through the art and told what was necessary without saying, Zadie thinks blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. You can kind of see by the expression on her face and, or maybe a comment exactly what she's thinking. And there's so much more that comes from the art and the words that are left off at sometimes.
I mean, I'd have to go flip through to double check this, but I don't recall this being an overly verbose or overly silent comic.
No. It's kind of happy medium almost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is, like I said, it's just different from any other book that I have read recently.
Yeah. Well, and again, I really applaud them kind of landing the ending at a way that I don't want to say wrapped everything up in a nice little bow, because it didn't. There's some stuff that would need to get dealt with in the next story or whatever, but it got it to a point of end of book and series, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was really clever, because when you first see that black, you think one thing, and then you're like, oh, it's a different thing. Mm-hmm. And I really like that. It was just very clever, because I think some writers would have had just that one ending without those following two pages.
Or they would have felt the need to have some kind of teaser or whatever of, ooh, this sudden reveal or this thing we're tantalizing you with, you must read the next book or whatever.
And then you have that 1 year cliffhanger and everyone forgets.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, I forgot about what that was. Yeah.
I mean, trying to end on a kind of a gotcha moment like that, I feel, is a really double-edged sword. It can be kind of cool, but it can really turn some people off, myself included at times.
Yeah, it really can. It has to be done very well, and I would say the follow-up has to be a little bit more timely if it's going to be a cliffhanger.
Yeah, yeah. Or, well, even if it's a tease of what the next story could be, if I don't know if you're going to tell it in the near future and stuff, why bother teasing me now, you know?
Yeah. So I basically have you on the Shadecraft train then.
I think so.
Ah, I got you hooked on something. I'm happy.
So definitely point it out when they come back with more stuff and or if they do something else.
I definitely will. Like I said, I've been so happy with this. I will keep them on your radar through the preview spotlight. I will make sure to shout it out when I see something from them again.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, so I'm really happy that I feel like I got to share this with you,
because
like you get to share things with me that I missed out on, you know, like the whole DC universe. But
details.
Yeah, just small details.
I'm really glad, like I said, you recommended this, and yeah, I was dragging my feet on doing it, because it's Jane wants to do it. I don't know if I like it, but I love this. I thought it was great. So yeah, thanks for pushing for this.
So two thumbs up, A pluses. Everyone needs to get it, and we'll just keep shouting it out when I see a trade or a hardcover or the next book or whatever.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Cool.
The January previews came out on December 29th, and the deadline for preview spotlight number 170 is the morning of Saturday, January 8th. Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website.
The show notes and form for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.